I'll never forget the first moment when I walked into a cinema. I was hooked from there on.
Hello, and welcome to Scone On Podcast number 52.
I don't have anything funny for that 52. Anybody?
Years worth of podcasts.
Yeah, that's actually not bad. Yeah. A full year to go back and listen to me.
And
you
me.
Poor sods. And Philip as well.
And mainly Niall.
And about 9% of Darren.
Yeah.
Like maybe less. We got a little bit of maths.
Yeah.
No, Jay is not an accountant.
No, I am not. Yet.
Anyway. Enough lunacy. Let's start as we usually do. So, what have we watched this week, gentlemen?
Yeah, I've only got one because I've been busy.
Jay has a life. Newsflash.
This is unusual. Next week, I'll be back to normal movie length, kind of, you know, 3 or 4 films next week. Don't worry.
He says that now.
This week, I have got Spring.
Summer?
No. Spring.
Autumn?
This is a...
Fall.
Shut it, both of you. This is a independent kind of horror film by two directors, Aaron Moorhead and Justin Benson, which was recommended to me.
I've heard of this one. Is this the one with Lou Pucci?
If you say so.
Jay's looking it up hurriedly on Letterboxd.
I did look up the actors. I'd never heard it before. You may well be right. But it is a very interesting film. It's a... I don't know what you describe it as. It's kind of Before Sunrise meets... I don't know. Some sort of horror.
Okay, you were going well there. You were going for a poster quote, and then you just gave up.
Yeah.
Before Sunrise meets...
Dot, dot, dot.
It is the actor you're talking about. Actor.
actor.
I've
heard of it, and I've heard good things.
Yes. This guy kind of gets into trouble in the US, kind of hightails it out of... town to Italy in that kind of pure American backpackery kind of stuff.
As opposed to that pure American gangstery kind of way.
But they touch on the whole, you know, loud Americans in Europe kind of thing in the film. And he kind of ends up kind of in this kind of small town on the coast just outside of Rome. And where in classic movie tradition, he spots a girl. And he wanders around, you know, picturesque kind of areas. Along the sea, the coast, lovely, beautiful, blah, blah. They like each other, so on and so forth. But there's something off because she ain't what she says she is.
The old green mare, she ain't what she used to be.
This is kind of great. I'd give it like about three and a half out of five, which is pretty good for me.
Okay, we've got the score. There is nothing else we need to contextualize.
There's been the last couple of years, I've seen quite a few kind of low-budget horrors, which I've really liked, actually. I like the Babadook. I wasn't so much gone with Follows as such, but things like Honeymoon and Starry Eyes, which I really liked in the last couple of years. And this is another one to it. It does not necessarily anything new, but does it really well. And the two leads, who I've never really seen anything before, are great and have that kind of all-important chemistry despite issues. And there are issues in that relationship and complications. But it's well-made, well-thought-out, and doesn't go the full kind of OTT horror route, but it has really interesting areas, very grounded, very interesting, and has really nicely judged ending. Yeah, I liked it.
I like to hear that because horror can often box that.
It's underplayed at the end, which rather than overplayed, because a lot of them tend to go for excess at the end, kind of
kaboom,
because they've already been so restrained, already you've earned it or whatever it would be. But it goes either way in this, and it works just for that reason and works really well. I'd recommend it.
Very good. Spring. That is available, I believe, in the US and. It might be available.
It's not available. It's not. I suspect it's not going to be a cinema release, but you can get it on video demand.
Okey-doke. Darren?
Cool. Bank holiday weekend, so lots and lots of terrible, cheesy films.
Like last week.
Like every week.
You say that bank holiday like it's a... It's other than an extra day to do it in. Yeah. It's no different than any other weekend.
Yeah.
Okay, I like it.
But, In the Line of Fire.
Oh,
that's a great
Wolfgang.
Yeah, good old Wolfgang.
Good old Wolfgang Petersen.
It's great. A German director with whose sort of specialty seems to be movies about the U.S. presidency. It's fantastic constructed. It was the last film I think that Clint Eastwood starred in, not directed by him, until The Trouble with the Curve, what, 2-3 years ago now?
I have no idea, I've never seen it.
The Trouble with the Curve.
Amy Adams and Justin Timberlake.
Yeah. There's a lot of trouble.
There's a reason why I didn't see that.
There's a lot of trouble with this particular curve. But in the Line of Fire, it's fantastic.
I haven't seen it probably in close to 8-10 years, but I remember I saw it the cinema came out, and I've seen it a couple of times since, and it's great fun. Malkovich hands it up something fierce. He's really good.
He does. It's one of those great movie villain performances where he's chewing on the scenery. Like, there are extended bits where he just sort of, like, he phones Clint Eastwood, who's the Secret Service agent, like, protecting the president, which seems like a very odd thing to fixate on if you're going to assassinate the president.
Yeah.
You know, one imagines the president should really be the subject of your attention there.
Hard to recall, though, I would imagine.
They screen that a little bit, you know?
There are more unbelievable things in the film. Like, at that stage, Eastwood was getting on a bit. Just a little.
Oh, Rene Russo?
What?
Rene Russo?
Okay, besides Rene Russo, but...
It was extraordinary.
Just in general.
In many ways.
Yeah.
But I struggle to believe, that, again, no disrespect to Clint Eastwood, that he can actually run like that.
Listen, it's a motorcade, it's going like 15 miles an hour. I could just about get away. He's easy, though. He strikes us like... There's kind of backstory, if I remember correctly, he was on the Kennedy,
he missed the
job.
I got that
kind of black and white photo of him with the head photoshopped onto it, kind of. He's crying, if I remember correctly.
CGI was great.
Yeah. Oh, wasn't it?
Yeah.
But it was National Enquirer-like photo.
Yeah. But I was fine with that. I remember that kind of liking it, going, yeah, I could buy it. Eastwood's Eastwood. As a Secret Service, it's probably the most American you could be as well, which just suits Clint Eastwood.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like,
unless you got, say, Chuck Norris in there.
You're in a different film. Even Malkovich can't overact the ball.
That's not like taking the bullet for the president. That's like roundhouse kicking the bullet back so it kills John Malkovich.
Which I wouldn't mind seeing as a movie,
Actually, speaking of which, have you seen The Expendables 2?
No.
Which is very odd to say. It's the best of the Expendable films, which is, you know.
I have seen it, and I probably it's hard to disagree because They're all terrible. It's relative to what you want.
Yeah.
All I remember thinking about The Expendables 2, and I've said it a few times, is that it seems to be entirely constructed around Call of Duty maps as scenes. which makes it an interesting watch. I was soft about The Expendables because I know they're terrible. I think Sylvester Stallone knows they're terrible. I think everybody acting in knows they're terrible.
But they're getting a paycheck and they're having fun.
Yeah, and it's kind of bounce along with it. And Lundgren was great in the first one, and which I actually really liked.
Lundgren was great. I never thought I'd hear that.
He was actually good in it, like in relative terms to everything. In context of these films, he was fine.
And the filmography as a whole.
Yeah.
But no, I mean, like, the thing I remember about The Expendables 2, and it's enough that it gets, like, that extra half star or whatever that bumps it above the others. Because we're all about the metric measurements here. is the sequence where Jean-Claude Van Damme executes the... spoiler alert for anybody who hasn't watched the first 15 minutes. Jean Villene. The head of the, you know, sort of dodgy European mercenaries as opposed to the non-dodgy American mercenaries. But where he executes a member of the main cast, and you can guess which member of the main cast it is because it's the only member of the main cast who isn't drawing their pension yet.
Yeah.
But he executes him, not with a bullet through the head, not by snapping his neck, but by holding a dagger up to the guy's heart and roundhouse kicking it through him. It's amazing.
Wow.
It's a work of art. And that's kind of what I imagine that Chuck Norris in The Line of Fire would look like.
A work of art may well be stretching it somewhat, but I know exactly where you're going.
I looked at the cinema and I was like, I don't think I've ever seen anything quite like this before.
Yeah.
Show me something
where Wally on his best day could not come up with that.
I suspect he couldn't. Yeah. For many reasons.
But no, so that I saw In the Line of Fire. I also saw South Park, Bigger, Longer, and Uncut.
Magnificent.
It is. And I'm actually...
There's so much fun to be had, but as a PG-13 rated podcast...
Well, I'll tell you one you can't have. Blame Canada.
Yeah, that's easy.
That was Robin Williams at the Oscars as well. That was just about the only song you could perform at the Oscars, I think.
And it got the
should have bloody won as well.
Yeah.
It should have, but oh well.
But that's what...
Bill Bastard Collins,
yeah.
That's what I like about Trey Parker and Matt Stone, because I'd argue that it's Bigger, Longer, and Uncut isn't their best film. I'd argue that's Team America. But I like...
Yeah, I could probably go with that, but I really have a real soft spot for Team
But I like the juxtaposition between like the incredible crassness of the songs yeah. and everything like that. But the fact that it's clearly structured
as a
not only any musical, but like a Broadway musical, where like you have at the middle of the film you have a reprise where all the characters
the four squares, where they all sing
their own songs yeah. as part
and
of a medley in harmony.
Together, yeah,
it's,
and it comes together really well as
it,
well.
It really does.
I think that when you get distracted by like the profanity involved and the gruesomeness and all that sort of stuff. I think yeah. you get distracted from the fact that you know,
it's well structured. They know what they're doing.
These guys are really theater nerds.
Yeah.
which
the Book of Mormon would suggest anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, yeah. so yeah, we really should have seen that coming. But yeah, so again, great film. And then finally, I discovered that my roommate had not watched Jurassic Park. So
after beating him for 20 minutes...
I convinced him to at some stage sit down and watch it, but I watched The Last World, The Lost World.
It should have been The Last World.
The Last, oh, yes, last it should
word.
Have actually.
Indeed.
It should have been. Because it'd been a while since, I think Jurassic Park is always on television, so I think everybody's intimately familiar with that particular film.
Yeah.
Yes. And that wonderful credit, dinosaur supervisor Phil Tippett. You had one job, Phil!
Hey, well, there is a scene where you can see Phil Tippett. If you're watching, watch the dinner or the diner scene. You can actually see the hand go in and tip the velociraptor so that its head bobs. It's actually really quite amusing. Ah, practical effects.
Like, where would we be?
Yeah.
We wouldn't have Jurassic Park. Simple as that.
Yeah, no, that's it. Well, I think that was the problem with Jurassic Park 3, and I suspect, looking at the trailers, it might be a problem with Jurassic Park 4. But, like, I am a big fan of The Lost World in that I recognize it doesn't really work in any way at all, but...
But this is very good after the book,
very good book.
Okay.
Is that it's a film that is next to impossible to figure out in terms of tone, in terms of content, yeah. in terms of theme. It's a glorious mess. Like, it's a movie where they took the comic relief sidekick from the first film and basically made him an action hero. Like, this was a time in the 90s when Jeff Goldblum was, like, the Rock for, like, 15 minutes.
What a time to be alive.
It was. Like, imagine living in that world. And it's great, because, like, Ian Malcolm as a character, he's a guy you don't want to go on vacation with, let alone a guy you want to get sent to, like, a dinosaur island with. And I think that it works because it is so gloriously odd. Like, the tone is hilariously off. Like, it's funny, but it's also incredibly, incredibly dark. Like, there's a sequence where the T-Rex is sort of stomping through the crowd of anonymous extras, and it gets an extra on its foot, and it just sort of drags him along for a couple of feet, and it's grim and dark and horrible, but it's also like, hey, look, he has to scrape that extra off there.
like all main Hollywood actors have to do.
Yeah, every once in a while.
I'm going to put it this way. You say it's a glorious mess. It is a mess. It's certainly not glorious. There are too many. Pete Postlethwaite is in it, and he steals every scene he's in because he's Pete Postlethwaite,
as he does in bloody
everything.
He does.
Are you saying a base camp or a buffet?
Jeff Goldblum is usually good value, but here he just doesn't have the same fun as he had in Jurassic Park because now he's a lead. He has to shoulder
it's
the
carry the bloody thing. Yeah, and that's not where it is. Goldblum's the guy beside the guy.
Yeah.
And always will.
Unless it's a fly. He's a tragic lead and he's great.
Yeah.
I hate Vince Vaughn. Everybody hates Vince Vaughn.
Everybody hates Vince Vaughn, don't they?
It is hilarious, though, that he disarms the hunters in The Lost World, which is quite hilarious given his comments in the past week.
Yes, that's true.
Indeed.
Apparently there are some circumstances where you don't conceal and carry. Conceal and carrying in a school, A-okay. Conceal and carrying an island with deadly dinosaurs.
Not Vince, get your priorities right, mate.
Yeah.
I'm going to let Julianne Moore have the last word on this. She has freely admitted she took this film to pay off a divorce settlement, and frankly...
More respect for that than anything else.
Yeah, unless you have a good reason like that, why bother?
Yeah.
Harsh. I, again...
Fair.
It's been a long time. I'd have to rewatch, which I've no real desire to.
It is.
I prefer Jurassic Park 3.
What?
Hold on.
Which is the least bad Jurassic Park sequel?
I suspect we'll have a new winner in a week or so.
Who says we don't prejudge movies here?
Tough to top.
Oh.
Or bottom.
Those trailers would suggest that... I don't have a good swing in it. They really are.
I don't demand a lot of realism from my, like, dinosaurs go berserk on an island.
No.
But there's a point where you go, it's been like 200 days since our last person got eaten by a dinosaur. let's build an even bigger, smarter, deadlier dinosaur.
Yeah.
And like, just let it do what it will.
Also, it's not enough to say, is this a good idea? That doesn't get you off the hook for anything.
Yeah.
It's just, it's a knowing reference, fine. But yeah. It's not enough to base a whole hinge of a story on.
But the fact that, like, you've gotten to the point where you're like, the game ranger is asking this question, and not like the board of executives or the scientists.
It surely must have lawsuits up the ass. Like.
Yeah. You imagine that ImGen is sort of like, has a whole division for like, dino-related fatalities.
And there are billions.
Yeah. And this is why.
I think everyone got the fucking thing off the ground.
This is like, insurance. That's what I want.
I don't even want to. The logistics are insurance.
I remember actually, this is one of the things about Crichton's novel. Crichton's original Jurassic Park novel is not a great piece of fiction. It's actually a lot worse than the film.
Well, yeah, but then again, you're not watching the original Jurassic Park for the script in the same way.
Although you're watching it because Steven Spielberg's directing it.
Yeah, and the spectacle of the death.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, one of the things I actually really liked about the original novel is the fact the first couple of chapters are structured as sort of like a weird mystery where people keep getting mauled by giant lizards and the company can't figure out why this is happening. building to the reveal of, oh my god, there are dinosaurs! Which,
as opposed to giant lizards.
Yeah, as opposed to giant lizards. Now, given the title of the
book... We lived in simpler times then, didn't we?
We really did. Given the title of the book is Jurassic Park, it may have been a bit of a giveaway, though, to be fair.
Good times.
Good indeed. Times. But yeah, so no, I will stand by The Lost World. I would argue it's the best remake of King Kong.
Well, better than the other one.
Yeah.
Jackson. The other
I'm ones. Not a big
there was
valid.
Also the...
Yeah,
the
yeah. Just terrible.
I've no interest in either of those. I really don't like Peter Jackson.
Mm.
That's all I gotta say about that.
Okay. So there's your ringing endorsement on that.
Darren says, get out and watch The Lost World.
No,
that's all I heard.
Yeah, that's exactly what you got from that.
Darren watched two films we talked about a lot more. I love these conversations. I love how we ramble. Now we'll see what I can conjure up.
Ramble away, Philip.
Okay.
Listen up, Philip.
Shut up.
Philip.
More.
Sorry.
Darren, you mean?
Darren.
More on Listen Up, Philip later.
Yeah.
But I'm going to start. I had a rewatch, which I had been meaning to do for a long time, especially since I got it on a nice shiny Blu-ray recently. Sweet Smell of Success. Match me, Sydney.
Quite a film.
It is. What? It's in my top 20.
It's one of the greatest.
It is. Just.
What? It's.
Burt Lancaster being arguably the biggest bastard you will ever see in a film. More than...
Certainly in a Hollywood film.
Oh,
yeah. Like, it's extraordinary.
It's dark.
It's really
dark.
And it doesn't let up.
No. Everybody's a shit.
Yeah.
Tony Curtis is. Burt Lancaster is the biggest of them all. And there's no respite for any character in it.
It's grim. And it's like the ironic kind of lights of New York, where nothing is bright, even though it's New York.
Yeah, and even though some scenes take place in the day, and that's the beautiful cinematography.
Yeah, it's gorgeous.
And to think that this grimness came from Alexander McKendrick, who had made The Lady Killer and Whiskey Galore.
Yeah,
and then suddenly to see it turned on itself with this that wonderful, wonderful script by Ernest Lehman and Clifford Odets.
Yeah. Oh, the script is sensational.
They're great. You're dead, son. Get yourself buried. As critics, as people who write and want to get the word out about stuff, that's what we have to aspire to.
Also, it's an interesting thing, because everybody has people they know that you kind of recommend films, say, what year was it made? And you go, nah, 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 and you go, black and white. This is one of these films, I think, that if you genuinely sat down, you'd be shocked by it in a lot of ways. Like,
it feels
modern, it's fresh, it's angry, it's dark, it's weird, it's beautiful and dangerous. And like, it's all. But when people talk about like kind of modern, we don't get adult films for modern audience. Like, this is it. This is a brilliant
this was
one.
Film for adults before the idea of films for adults.
This is like I can't think of anybody that I know that would like a, you know, just would want to see a film, a good adult drama that you can say watch this and this is going to knock your socks off. Because it will. It's that good.
Come back, Sydney. I want to chastise you.
I need to rewatch it.
Well,
I'm going to borrow Philip's Blu-ray. Aren't I, Philip?
I need to take a bite out of you. You're a cookie full of arsenic. Oh, it's so good. And It's rarely you hear me say that with such enthusiasm.
It is,
but
yeah.
It is so
you're almost never enthusiastic. Cool.
And coming from you, that's quite
that's
something,
isn't it?
Secondly, rewatch another one I've been planning for a while: King of New York.
Ooh,
Abel Ferrara.
Yeah.
Yes.
So
welcome. Yeah.
This is interesting. It's
a little dated, maybe.
Not as much as you think. I put in terms of 1990s mob movies, it's better than Godfather Part 3, but not quite up with Miller's Cross.
What year was it?
1990.
Okay.
I mean, that's Goodfellas territory then, yeah. In time. Like.
Yeah.
It's a grittier.
It doesn't match that or Miller's Cross.
No.
But.
Well, I'd always associate it with like late 80s New York. Sort of like.
It's right at the end of it.
That sort of urban decay.
And it feels like you're watching it, and it feels like New York is in that.
Transition before
it's in the death throes.
Yeah, yeah. Before so the new New York came out.
Yeah, so you still have all these gangsters that Christopher Walken surrounds himself with, these black hoodlums led by Lawrence Fishburne, and they've still got their swagger and they've still got their bling and their
corporate attitude. Is just around the corner, and that kind of clean up of the city and all that kind of thing. It's just
as represented by the likes of David Caruso and his ridiculous hair, which is always ridiculous because he's David Caruso.
Yeah. He was the movie star for 5 minutes. Remember when he was a thing?
Remember when he left NYPD Blue because he was going to great things and then turned up on CSI Miami 10 years later.
What did he leave that for? I'm guessing it wasn't Jade.
Do you know what? If it wasn't Jade, it was the other one he made. It wasn't Nicolas Cage, a remake. I was only chatting to Scott Weinberg about it a couple of weeks ago, where Nick Cage is bench pressing a woman. Kiss of Death?
As you do.
Nick Cage bench presses a woman.
Yeah.
I've never seen like that, but I need to.
You
should see the movement.
Properly bench presses a young lady. Kiss of Death, I'm pretty sure it is. It's absolutely bomb for the one. It's an insane remake of an old film. It's insane.
It's all Samuel L. Jackson.
It's crazy. Yeah. I would hardly recommend it to anybody, because it's one of those things that slipped by at the time, and it's in some ways indescribable.
So just to be clear, you're saying David Caruso meant for greater things.
Briefly, it was a thing that he was going to be.
Look, he's there. Yeah, he's
the next big thing
on the poster. Him, Samuel L. Jackson.
No,
Nicolas Cage.
Like it was. He left NYPD Blue for it and was replaced by Jimmy Smith, if I remember correctly. Right.
And you know what?
And then nobody remembers that Caruso was even in NYPD Blue because he left after 1 year.
Yeah. Well.
It's so
he's
weird.
Not a very good actor.
It is so weird because again, he had that deadly double in 95 between this and Jade, which are and
awful.
He was going into this thing, presumably because he thought he was going to work with great directors, William Friedkin, and Kiss of Death, directed by Barbara Schroeder.
Yep.
But no.
Caught them on the downswing.
Really did, and he's been well. Thank
you. I'd say
anybody who's done what, like 11 years of CSI.
It's not everybody that can make a living off taking off their sunglasses. Is it?
For somebody that can't really act, he's done all right.
You make it sound like an impairment that he overcame.
Kind of. Not a million miles from that.
You know, he hides behind the King of New York because everybody. Hell, everything about King of New York is a bit excessive. Everybody's OTT. Lawrence Fishburne, oh good God. I mean, in the credits, he's down as Larry Fishburne for a start.
Well, that happens occasionally. Yeah. It's an
especially in the late 90s, the late 80s, early 90s.
Was he not credited as Larry Fishburne on Apocalypse Now? No?
I think he might have been.
I think Lawrence was a late invention, probably also, Boys in the Hood, no?
Could have been, actually. Right. Oh, I don't research.
Actually, just as an aside from. Well, it's two things. One, I think King of New York has one of the most graceful endings of a film.
It's after all the chaos, it ends very.
I really like it.
Not quietly, but
it's
just
kind of quietly.
Restrained.
Yeah, I really like it, and I remember watching at the time going, "That really impressed me." The restraint on show.
It would have impressed me more if it hadn't been so OTT up to that point. It is actually a bit of a. It's not an anticlimax. It's just a. Where'd that come from?
Yeah.
I think I like it, but I'm not sure where
also,
that was hiding.
Also, as a kind of an aside, there's a film that came out a few years later, I think, and I remember seeing it and really liking it, and it's one I was only thinking about a couple of weeks ago, and I must revisit, considering we've already talked about Lawrence Fishburne and Jeff Goldblum, Deep Cover. Well worth a watch.
Tell me more.
It's this kind of undercover operation. It's been a long time since
I got the idea from that title,
and
certainly.
Jeff Goldblum, I think, is kind of a handler / dodgy guy.
I'm on the fax machine, keep going.
Get on the fax machine.
I'm on it, keep going.
And they're essentially the film's about their relationship, really.
Yeah, Duke Cover.
And
directed by Bill Duke, 1982.
It's good. It's really, really good. Having said that, it's been a long time since I've seen it. But I remember watching the time. Similar in that time.
It's an anti-drug squad charging high boss cocaine delivery to LA.
That's right. And I think, I'm not sure if Goldblum is the drugs kingpin, or I'm trying to remember. Because he's playing against type, I think, at the time.
And no, is he not playing the lawyer?
That's it, yeah.
The lawyer's name is David Jason.
I don't know,
that's 7 years me on so many levels.
I know.
There's your Only Fools and Horses American reboot, Jeff Goldblum.
I'm amazed they didn't try that.
Yes.
There you go.
It's good though. Well worth watch.
50 cents to you, dollar. Oh dear.
Anywho.
And finally, just to cap this off, I had one new watch for me anyway, but the oldest of the films I watched. No, almost. The Devil Rides Out.
Hammer Horror!
Hooray!
What's his face? Is it Charles Grey now?
It is Charles Grey.
It's Charles Grey, I remember.
Charles Grey in big purple robes. And
I don't think I've seen it, actually.
This is it.
It's as hard. You know what? I'd always heard that this was particularly good amongst the Hammer slate. And I watched it and I realised, wow, this is none more Hammer, I'm afraid. And I mean that even in terms of quality. It's basically...
it's glorious, is what Phil is trying to say.
No, I'm not.
Oh, we're going to have more arguments.
Have you seen it, Darren?
I have, actually. It was my gran and grandfather's favourite Hammer horror film. Well, so tread carefully.
I can see why...
Tread on the man's family dreams.
No, I can see why it would be someone's favourite. Because it has a certain charm. It has a certain warmth. But it's still that.
Yes, it's a Hammer horror film.
Yeah.
Which is...
Basically, two men, one played by Christopher Lee, are trying to... I've just discovered that a third friend of theirs is a devil worshipper. And he belongs to this coven.
It's like a sitcom. It's a great premise for a sitcom, I think.
Once they discovered their friend was a devil worshipper. But yeah, basically, it's them trying to spend the whole film trying to save him from this worshipping cult. Before they actually do summon the devil for real. It's best in this first half. There's a bit of intrigue. You're wondering where this is going to go. There's a good car chase. It's Christopher Lee runs in the centre. Hooray.
Nobody can argue that.
No. Yep. And then it gets sillier as the ceremonies get underway. And the devil does appear. And there's things with, pentagrams and giant spiders.
Sounds okay.
I mean, giant spiders with 1968 Hammer special effects.
Yeah,
I mean, pipe cleaners.
Out of Limerick's type kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Here, right?
Yeah, it's silly, but there is a certain fun charm to it. So, yeah, as Hammer goes, yeah, why not? I could see why someone would like, because there is, again, just that old school charm. When Christopher Lee racks up as the Duke de Richelieu.
If I remember correctly, and I might be wrong here, this was a late Hammer horror film, wasn't it?
1968.
Yeah, I think...
I think he went into the early 70s, didn't he?
Yeah. I think...
And then he got... Titillation came in and all that to try and sell them, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, no,
because I remember being a young man, a very young man, and I was like... Boobs and Hammer! Holy shit!
It's everything I ever wanted. Boobs and blood.
Dracula and boobs. Yeah. The greatest film ever made.
Yeah.
I was a simple, I was 28. I was about 50.
You're a very profound man.
Thank you, Philip.
You know, it's good. Yeah, you've got to be honest. Hopefully. Yeah,
yeah.
It's,
yeah.
You know, but no, if I remember correctly, though, isn't this, the car chase is quite prominent.
It is. It's quite good.
Hang on a second. Surely a car chase has no place in Hammer.
But it works.
That's what I think it is, if I remember correctly. Now I'm going to go.
Lord,
I'm half consider going to the fact machine and checking this out. But I remember hearing that this was like an attempt to make them modern and hip.
That sounds like
it's not easy to make them modern and hip when you have a car chase taking place in a film which is set in the mid to late 1920s.
Yeah, but you add a car chase and everything immediately becomes.
It's not bad as car chases go. I enjoyed it.
This is very strange.
You see what I mean? Hammer. Anyway, after all that lunacy, shall we move on to the news at long last?
Oh, yes. Jesus, we're only at the news. Okay.
Yeah, I know. We're being chatty today. And still, you're getting your money's worth this week, folks. Let's start with some festival news. Two films near and dear to two film festival rather that are near and dear to our hearts have announced their opening film.
Yes.
The 2015, because that is the year we're in.
Yeah, no, but it's nice to keep the year we're in if you can.
The 2015 Galway Film Flat runs from July 7th to 12th, and it will open with Simon Fitzmaurice's debut Irish drama, My Name is Emily.
Okay.
Love story, road movie, story of two teens, played by Ivana Lynch and George Webster. He's a newcomer.
I am not sure if I'm in the right area, if this is the right film I'm thinking of, but is this the film that he kind of put on Kickstarter to raise money and he gets, oh God, I don't want to get it wrong, but is he Motor Neurons or something? He was directing it in a very kind of something.
Yes,
is that the one? Is
right.
that the
that
one?
Is the
I
one.
Just I wasn't sure if it was, which sounds like an incredible achievement just to get one out. But I'd be interested to see actually whether it stacks up.
Hmm. The crowdfunding campaign raised over €100,000. It helped complete the funds of the film, which has also got financing from the Irish Film Board, BAI, TV3, and other companies based in Scandinavia.
But I know Scandinavians; they know a good thing.
The Vikings,
the Vikings,
the pillaging, the burning.
They do like a pillaging. They do
socialized medicine. It's a straight line, really.
Yeah,
boxes for babies.
Yeah,
those fins.
IKEA.
Yeah.
Anyway.
No, meatballs.
No, not good.
There are other stores where you can spend 5 hours your Sunday in, other than IKEA, just to pick it.
Yeah.
Not many.
We'd be keen to check that out because, as you say, just as a feat of filmmaking, going
to
the director on a personal level is quite something.
I'd be fascinated.
And also, it is Michael Smiley.
Ah, well.
Everyone likes Michael Smiley.
You had me at Michael Smiley.
Yes, and hello to Michael Smiley.
Indeed.
Yeah. Oh, I got to meet Michael Smiley a couple of months ago at Jade. That was good.
Philip is still glowing.
I have my autographed copy of A Field in England.
Yes, you do.
Bloody delighted with that, let me tell you. And meanwhile, the London Film Festival, which takes place in October, has announced that Suffragette will be its opening gala.
This sounds interesting, possibly good, very worthy.
Very Oscar-friendly.
As Meryl Streep, so we all know what's
going
on.
This is the fifth nomination.
Yeah.
oh, God. Well, I'll put
what
it this
way. What
did
Meryl do this year?
Last year's...
And Meryl Streep 4.
Last year's LFF opened with The Imitation Game, so it is going to be one of those prestige slots. But it is a basic retelling of the suffragette movement, the early days in Britain.
And stuff.
Starring Kerry Mulligan and Meryl Streep, of course, is she, and directed by Sarah Gavron.
Okay. The whole don't judge where you see it, but I think we know where it is going.
Yes, mainly to the Oscars.
Yeah.
To the polling booths.
Hey! Indeed.
So actually, that's a really good cast besides those two. You've Helena Bonham Carter, Brendan Gleeson, Ramona Garai, Anne-Marie Duff, Ben Whishaw.
I feel sad that Oscar season has made me so incredibly cynical that part of me suspects Suffragette was greenlighted because the actress and best supporting actress categories are normally quite weak.
Yeah, also, I was cynical before that, but I take the point. I think that's I think this stings of a manipulative... they need, and when that starts to run the story, you're in trouble. I think. So we'll see.
We shall see. I may attend. I may not. I haven't decided.
Of course, you will. You attend every year.
Well, I enjoy it.
I know.
And I haven't had a chance to get to any of the festivals thus far. So.
Indeed.
Meanwhile, our good friend Ronan Doyle is at the Transylvanian Film Festival.
Of course he is, because Ronan Doyle never sleeps, so it's perfect for him.
Hi, Ronan. If you listen.
Yeah, watching your 4,000 movie this year. Hope you enjoy.
Anyway, in other festival news, DIFF, formerly known as JDIFF, but now
it's called DIFF.
Are we going
to get a sponsor?
We don't know, but the first thing,
because I'm not liking DIFF, I'm going to be honest. Yeah. Two DIFF. You should get DIFF as a sponsor. That'd be great.
DIFF DIFF.
Yeah.
DIFF DIFF.
Sorry, we're out of DIFF. You want DIFF from Sweden?
DIFF man. Can't breathe.
I'm going to be honest. Yeah, when they are considering a title sponsor, they should, you know, one of the tests should be just pronouncing the first letter of the sponsor's name.
Can they just get something starting with J and
just for convenience? Because you got the branding already.
Yeah, exactly.
You don't change the hashtag.
No, exactly.
Anyway, the main news is that the Dublin International Film Festival is now open to submissions for its 2016 festival.
Yeah,
now, that is of course taking place next March. And basically, to be eligible, all films considered must be Irish premieres, they must be delivered for cinema exhibition in 35mm or digital, and for viewing purposes, entries should be submitted on DVD or by screening link.
Yeah, I'm still not sure about the later.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Because considering what it potentially could have delivered in the context of
this year, yeah,
festivals, and that they could have got films from Berlin and stuff like, yeah, that. It didn't really deliver, no, that. So what would be the point,
what's
in
the
real
advantage
terms?
Of it.
Yeah, exactly.
I think they mostly did because in the last years it had been clashing with the Glasgow Film Festival,
which,
and they were showing much the same.
But
thing.
That's fine.
But that's grand.
I don't live in Glasgow,
yeah,
so I don't really care about that.
Yeah.
Also, I think it was.
And they were probably hoping for more school.
Yeah. Well, I thought it was a fairly weak year this year, so...
I'd agree with that.
I don't know.
Some good stuff, but...
Oh, no, there's always good stuff. It's a fast festival, you pick, yeah, and choose and all that kind of stuff, and I saw some great things there. But overall, I think it was... Quality was down significantly compared to 2014.
I thought it was about par, wasn't
no,
it?
No.
I was a little... I saw more better films, if you know what I mean. I saw as a quality kind of... It's also a bit of where...
I think we saw some films that were as good as 2014, but there was a lot of dreck as well. A lot.
Yeah.
Yes. Like the opening film.
There was two or three films that...
Sorry, that
didn't belong.
No, Price of Osiris.
There's probably a couple of things that didn't belong at a festival. Never mind.
As the opening film.
But there's a couple more I can think of as well that probably didn't... Yeah, but they just didn't belong at any film festival. So the quality control, I thought this year was poor. Not always, not a pretty, some great stuff.
I don't mind a glut of films, like, if you have the venues to put them in and there's no obligation to go
see
them. Like,
actually fair. And all festivals have that to a certain degree. But I'm saying, when you get to the second tier and top tier,
I think
they're not as good as previous years, I would suggest.
Okay.
But I take the point, though. I mean, there should be...
There should be terrible films.
Yeah,
But I mean, like, as a celebration of cinema, if you're going to Diff and you're only seeing great films, you're not getting the holistic experience. And it's with any film festival.
That all may well be true. All I ever want to see is great films.
Oh, I see what you did there.
I wasn't going for a gag, but sure enough, I'll take it. So, in sum, yes, please submit films to JDiff Diff. For consideration, but please make them good.
Yeah,
made them terrible
or
for range.
Middling to good. At least be entertainingly bad if you're going to be bad.
Yeah. What films is it?
Yes. Now,
I like variety. Just go for it.
Just what Darren said. Yep. Be cautious. Anyway, my favourite news this week, by
this
a long
news.
Stretch,
God,
this is great news. It's IFI Open Day time again.
Clear my calendar.
Yes. This year, it's happening on the 20th of June, Saturday, 20th of June. Mark it now. And they've announced the lineup, and not bad at all this year. So just to, well, you're engaging.
It's shy one stellar.
You wanted a Goodfellas 25th anniversary.
I did, and I'm still a bit grumpy that hasn't happened.
Why
it's
did
a
you
perfect
can
time?
Can I ask you? But why, besides the perfect timing, why did you think it would happen? Did you
because there's
worse?
A 4K restoration? Also, I've asked the IFI about it, and he said it's not on the horizon as of yet. But there's a new restoration of the film. It screened at the New York Film Festival, or Tribeca Film Festival, Scorsese and all over there. And it seemed the perfect opportunity to even get the old 35mm out and pop it up there.
Okay.
That's all. That would have been nice. And I've never seen the big screen because I was too young when it came out. And I've seen it countless times. I don't know how many times, but I wouldn't mind seeing this in it. That's all. It's a personal great.
So that rant over.
It wasn't a rant. It was a description. You asked, and I'm telling you.
I didn't ask.
You inferred heavily.
I inferred. Yes.
No. You know, you did say,
no,
why
I
did
didn't.
You think they'd show it?
But
you said
I didn't
that.
Expect a long speech.
Yeah, don't ask
you
questions
if you don't want
answers.
The answers,
Philip. Listen up, Philip.
This is going to become a running theme, and I hate it.
don't worry, it won't make the top 10 next week.
Thank heaven.
No, don't be prejudging.
Yeah. Because we're all open-minded when it comes to the
Jurassic
World. Yeah.
Of course,
can I get back to IFI Open Day?
Sorry. Yes,
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 yes. Thank you.
Go ahead.
But just to fill in any news if you don't know what it's about, by the way, please go. Doors open at 11
a.m. But don't get
a.m.
my tickets, because they're my tickets.
Yeah, basically. Doors open
you're
at 11 a.m. to... Oh, my
God, shut up.
This is how do you think of Niall feels when we did this to him? We do this a lot.
We do. I feel sorry.
You're going to have a lot more sympathy for you if and when he comes back.
Because I can't keep this up. But I will persist.
Okay.
So, doors open at 11 a.m. on Saturday morning, but you'll need to be queuing before that. I would recommend get there by 9 a.m.
I'd never do that.
You'd it's part of the fun, Jay.
Yeah, I know, but...
I'll be there.
I'll be there at 10.
I'm not saving you a spot. There are far too many grouchy people behind me for me to do
that. I've never not got the tickets I wanted, so...
Well, the reason you need to queue is because they're limited to 4 tickets apiece.
Yep.
But you've got quite a wide range of films to pick from.
Oh, do we, Philip? Please tell me. What films are they?
Tell me more.
Tell me more. Okay. Well, let's see. There's the Stars of the Bay. We have some great classics. Wings, the first Best Picture Oscar winner.
Yes.
Nashville.
Which I love, and I think I might have to see on the big screen.
And Back to the Future.
Yeah, I love Back to the Future, but I don't need to see it soon.
No, but I'm...
Well, you probably already have.
I'm just talking about it.
I'm just describing, Jay.
You. Yes, we all love Back to the Future. Okay.
Also showing on the day are The Man Who Shot Liberty Valance, La Grande Bouffe, Forbidden Planet, Young Leslie Nielsen.
Yeah.
And there are also...
Tempest with a Robot.
Exactly, it is the Tempest
with a Robot. It's not to love.
What do you mean? It's not to love. Also, amongst the other screenings are Jaws, Monty Python, Life of Brian...
he's not the Messiah. He's a very naughty boy.
It's not the Messiah because Holy Grail is better. There, I said it.
Holy Grail is better, but they're both equally hysterical. In a sense, like Holy Grail is a better film, and its jokes are funnier, but there's not as many as Risen the Life of Brian.
True.
I'd argue the opposite. I'd say that Life of Brian is a better film overall. But as if you're looking for a Monty Python piece of work, I'd argue that Holy Grail is stronger.
That's for a podcast extra, I think.
Yeah,
I'm off it. King of the Britons.
What, you mean we're not going to derail it again? Oh. Aww.
There's been enough derailing of this already. Thank
your mother was a hamster and your father smelled like elderberries.
Now go away or I shall dunk you a second time. Anyway, yes,
it's just wide range
films. Yeah. And also including that are I also forgot to mention F for Fate.
Yeah, I'll be there for that. That's... I've actually never seen this, so I'll be there for that.
Also playing are, they've got 3 preview screenings.
Yes, Pray Tell, Philip.
Pray Tell. I don't know how pleased you'll be about these, Jay.
Okay.
But,
why would you say that?
Well, you'll just see. Sneak preview of Alice Rohrwacher's The Wonders, which went down fairly well at Cannes last year. God, it took a while to get here.
2014.
Yeah.
Yeesh. Yeah. Okay.
Tusk, the new horror comedy by Kevin Smith.
Yeah, I know. I won't be watching Tusk.
Yeah, I didn't think so. And Manglehorn, Barry Levinson's new film with Al Pacino.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, the person sounds better now if you said that. Yeah.
Open strong.
Yes. Well, indeed. And also during the day, they will have archive tours, family workshop, tour of the projection booth. In fact, a number of tours, but just make sure to get there on time. And they also have discounts on membership on the day.
I always have my bloody membership at this time of year. That's the problem. So I can't avail of those damn discounts.
Yeah. Yes, but despite that, we would.
But everybody should.
Yeah, because the Irish Film Institute, they do great work. And I mean, their motto is exhibit, preserve, and educate, and they do all three in fine style.
Yeah.
So. Saturday 20th, you know where to be. And
that's where I'll be.
And I shall be too.
I probably will be too. There was an awkward silence there where they both just stared at me.
I'll be at home.
Yeah, I'll probably be in another county.
That's okay.
That's okay. It's fair enough. I mean, you know.
We can't all be there, then.
Yeah, I'll be there in spirit.
We all have lives.
You know what I'll be doing? I'll be watching Goodfellas.
Fantastic.
God damn you.
Anyway.
I'm going to get the papers.
And Elon, I'm just sitting here living my life as a schnook.
Yes.
Or at least it feels that way sometimes.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's move on to the top 10, shall we?
Jesus, we're in the top 10. Okay, let's do the top 10.
Yeah. Oh, sure. Now you're
before midnight.
Now you're in a rush. Oh, I want to rewatch that. But now I notice you're in a rush.
I'm not in a rush per se.
Per se.
Per se.
Let me just get my top 10 here. It's. God damn, it's taking me a while.
It's not with your email.
It still haven't got my...
No.
I sent the email on to Jay quite a while before the podcast started, and it has not yet arrived. when we listen back, I'll email you again and see if it.
Damn it, Jim. We're film critics, not technicians.
Indeed.
Anyway, shall we start? And we shall. Oh, Jay, brace yourself.
I'm ready.
At number 10 is Home.
It just didn't go away, did it?
No, it didn't. It didn't go home.
Would you call it a home run?
I certainly. I mean, there.
Do you know what? DreamWorks certainly will. The fact that this is still the film that saved them.
Yeah, it's made a quid. Not bad.
Yeah, that is. And it's 11 weeks in the top 10.
Yeah.
Quite remarkable. But animation, hey, doing well. Who'd have thought? At number 9, Jay, brace yourself again, is Man Up.
Did somebody write this top 10 just for me?
Oh, yeah.
Is that what's happening here? I love you guys.
We love you too.
Yeah, it's a tough one to peg, that one.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't think that one will be lasting.
I'm certainly not up for that one, I will say.
Yeah.
You're attempting to do the pun thing now, are you?
Badly. But yes.
At number 8 is Danny Collins. Al Pacino is in the top 10.
That Michael Collins sequel, you never knew you wanted.
His younger brother Danny.
Yeah. This is somehow inexplicably good in the top 10. I don't know how this is happening.
Well, it's got Al Pacino and it had a shed load of advertising.
Is it because Al Pacino turned up in Ireland?
It does feel like it's been on every second bus stop in the city.
For the past month and a half.
I'm telling you, it's only made 35,000 and it'll be gone by next week, one would imagine. So.
Well, you're hoping so.
Try not to sound so happy.
I can see that.
But I can't help it.
Take that, Al Pacino. Thank you for providing some of my formative film education.
But stop sucking.
Be less terrible.
That's a fair request.
I think that's good advice for all of us. Be less terrible.
Be humble also. Yeah. Al.
Did you hear about, was it the Edinburgh Film Festival where he was, or maybe it was the Glasgow, where he was charging for flights to fly with, you could fly with Al Pacino.
Who would want to be on the same airplane as Al Pacino? I'll keep it down when you're trying to have a sleep.
But yeah, so basically he sold...
These are good nuts!
Jay's Al Pacino impression. I never knew I wanted to see it, but I'm so glad it happened.
It'll never happen again.
Pity.
Ooh-ah.
But it was, it was from Glasgow, and it was, you could pay £25,000 sterling to fly on his private jet
from
Glasgow to London.
Glasgow to London?
Yeah!
Yeah, go first class to Melbourne for less than that. Yeah.
Like, also, what are you going to talk about in
16 minutes you're in the air?
Yeah, like you want to get the conversation down to a fine art there, you know?
Godfather of a Tree.
What were you thinking?
Everything else after that.
Really?
Sorry.
Was Central Woman exceptions. Before or after that?
Oh, God, Central Woman.
Central Woman is so OTT.
Oh, God, it's awful.
It's enjoyable. Okay, Heat?
Yes, he disagreed.
Okay. Devil's Advocate.
No, he's ham. The whole thing is ham.
But he's Satan and he's ham.
No.
God!
We know.
He's an absentee landlord!
And Pacino's been an absentee actor for some time.
Okay, fine. Any Given Sunday? Nobody?
No.
Okay, that's all I got here. That's
insomnia.
All I got.
I'll give you Insomnia.
Insomnia, there we go.
Yeah, grudgingly give you that.
At number 7 is Avengers Age of Ultron.
Closed in a 3 million quid.
Oh, it should.
It's number 6 biggest film of all time.
Is that all?
Yeah, what a disappointment.
Yeah,
how will Disney sleep at night?
Yeah, go back to the day job, Joss Whedon, that is.
If only they had another film coming before the end of the year that would almost certainly earn more.
Yeah.
Yes.
If only.
Yes. At number 6 is 2x2 animation. And would you believe, this is not only held, it's gone up. 27% increase on last week.
God. That's a pretty great arc there.
That sounds very similar to the joke you made last time.
I apologize. There
could be a lot of that.
I like that one.
it's a keeper. Yeah, it's a keeper.
It's definitely a keeper.
At number 5, Poltergeist, which has a nearly 48%, over 48% drop, but yeah, still taking over.
Yeah.
It's earned over 200,000.
Yeah.
And for a horror remake, it's more than I'd begrudge.
Yeah. But Venice, it is quite a... like a pedigreed horror remake as horror remakes go. You know, you're not talking like The Hills of Eyes 3, The Hills of Even More Eyes.
Yeah.
if only it had that subtitle.
It could well have. Nobody would have known.
Nobody would have noticed.
Exclusive interview with Wes Craven. Actually, the original title, subtitle for The Hills Have Eyes 2 was actually The Hills Have Even More Eyes. It's just a further mutation.
Apparently it didn't test well. So
yeah. Well, I'd imagine The Hills Have Eyes 2 did not test well, because that's not a good film.
Have you seen The Hills Have Eyes 2? I saw it, but I didn't pay for it, and the TV remote may have been broken.
That's the excuse you're going.
That's what I'm going for. Nobody can call me on it.
Hills have too many eyes.
Yeah.
That was the third one.
Two hills, two eyes.
At
number four, Tomorrowland, A World Beyond.
Yeah.
Go on.
I was going to say, I wonder how Brad Bird is feeling the day after Tomorrowland. Sorry.
Anyway.
That was uncalled for.
This has had just a 26% drop, so... I mean, it's not going to cause Disney any less sleep, but...
They can take the hit of this one. You can offset with the billions you can make for everything else.
Although, apparently they've said they're not greenlighting Tron 3 off the back of this.
I have no complaints with that.
My taste for... My affection for terrible movies means that I kind of liked Tron Legacy.
I like the visuals, I like the score, I like
Michael Sheen. Yes, Michael Sheen as David Bowie shooting his gun.
Change the music and the scene. Electrify the audience if you'd be so kind.
Yeah, and that bit where everybody's brawling and he's just randomly firing his gun in a very suggestive manner over the crowd.
If there was a huge brawling crowd out the window, that's what I'd do.
Philip, I did not need to know that.
Yeah. Every man wants to be Michael Sheen, just from a different film.
You know me, Jay. I'm a man of the people.
Yeah.
And number three, Mad Max, Fury Road.
It's done good.
It's still doing quite well.
This has had just a 32% drop, but considering it's the third week, that's not bad. Again, the word of mouth.
Very good word of mouth.
Yeah, but about $1.25 million earned so far.
Yet to meet somebody who doesn't like it.
I
haven't met anybody who doesn't like it.
I was talking about it yesterday, actually, with a few people after Tag Rugby, really. And they were, the three or four of us had seen it, and universally adored.
Yeah.
It's so much fun.
It really, really is.
The Mad Max film we never knew we wanted, but... We are glad it's here.
Oh, yeah. I'm very glad.
Live-action post-apocalyptic wacky races. And that should be all you need to sell it.
Yeah.
Warner Brothers, put that on the poster.
Are you saying Charlize Theron is Penelope Pitstop? No, Rosie Huntington-Whiteley is Penelope Pitstop. She's the one that has to be rescued.
Yeah, I'm just imagining Lord Humongous as Dick Dastardly. And Nicholas Holt as Muttley.
This kind of works.
It really does.
It does, yeah. I can't wait it.
Love me, Jay. Number two, and also holding well, another of these summer phenomena that I just love when they crop up, Pitch Perfect 2. And only a 20% drop. Again, word of mouth, fandom is keeping this.
I've seen the first one, I'm real desire to see a sequel.
You thought the first one was okay.
This is less okay. It feels like a thing. It doesn't feel like a film that. Other than doing the same thing, it doesn't feel like just a sequel in it.
What do you need?
Yeah,
like, what is the next step?
That's a film that's been already for you.
What narrative arc do I feel has not been satisfied?
Yeah. There was not enough of a narrative arc.
Where's those loose ends? There's none. It's perfectly wrapped up as one film. It's
The narrative has no loose ends. Look at those actresses. Not one of them has one loose end in their hair. They are all perfectly quiet.
It's fine. It's just one film. Get it out of there.
Yeah.
But it's making money, so.
Yeah, it is. And
there could be five of them.
And almost purely on the charm of Anna Kendrick, I wouldn't begrudge it a penny.
She's great. And
Elizabeth Banks, you know, even though she's been in some terrible films.
She's generally good anyway. She generally comes through most things on scale, considering
the stuff that she's coming through.
Yeah, and, you know, with one line, she got the biggest laugh of that film from me. Well done. And, number one, San Andreas. Now, this has opened with 290,000 at 65 locations. Pretty good average location.
I'm going to guess this is going to take a significant drop next week.
I'm hoping so, because...
you think the ground will swallow it up?
Yeah.
Yes. Although, there's been quite a front load of groundswell. And I just can't see how it can maintain that.
But it's so many faults, though.
Did you go see it?
No.
I did.
Yes.
Darren did.
Yes.
We were at the same screening.
Yes.
I hate this film.
Oh, right, okay.
I really do. And I knew I should have known I'd hate it, because is this almost exactly the same problem. In fact, it is the same problem as I had with 2012. It's destruction porn that is absolutely no fun.
All right. You agree with this?
Mostly, yes.
Yeah.
I feel like I've just been asked to weigh in. Yes, mostly.
Mostly.
He's standing there.
Non-committal.
Mostly. Mostly.
Yes.
We were talking about it last week. We're predicting what could be good about it and what probably wouldn't be good about it.
Yeah.
Let's start off with the good. Paul Giamatti.
Paul Giamatti.
He earns his paycheck.
As he always does.
Yeah, yeah, because he mostly through looking like Richard Dreyfuss and strategic use of the word bro.
And also, in fairness, there are not many actors who can sell the line, like, as a seismologist, what do? We tell everyone. And you're like, you really believe that he wants to tell everyone.
Yeah.
Those seismologists predicted the earthquake whole minutes before it happened.
Yeah.
Good guys.
Good guys. Great guys.
Less than great guys is, okay, The Rock. He's The Rock. And everybody likes The Rock.
Yeah, he's a bedrock upon which the film rests.
Exactly. But the problem is, it's one of the standard disaster setups wherein The Rock's character, a rescue helicopter pilot, commandeers a helicopter so he can rescue only his wife and his daughter, who are conveniently at the heart of the action. His wife is caught up in in the earthquake in Los Angeles, and that gives him just enough time to fly all the way up the coast of California to South Francisco to rescue their daughter.
Godzilla do essentially this last year.
It did.
He starts to panic, like, I wonder where he's going to go next. Where's my wife living?
But it would be a very different film if both the monster and the main character were heading in different directions. It'd be like, I'll meet you in Paris.
I think that would have been a better film. I think that definitely would have been a better film.
Yes, yeah.
We'll always have Paris.
Yeah. Aaron Taylor Johnson standing with flowers on top of the Eiffel Tower and hears the rumbling sound of Godzilla approaching.
God, I hated Godzilla. Sorry,
I wasn't too fond of it either, but I prefer it to San Andreas because
I thought
Godzilla was not as willfully stupid as San Andreas. And I think
but it's got to be pretty stupid because
I think Godzilla took itself too seriously.
Indeed.
Far too seriously. And I think that, Aaron Taylor Johnson just doesn't work for me.
No, he doesn't work for anybody.
The way he was every member of his cast.
Yes.
Oh, I kind of like Ken Watanabe.
He's got to stand there and be Japanese.
But he also got to say the Godzilla.
But that's not enough.
No, I mean, there's...
And is it like he's got the best of
it? Yeah, my problem with Godzilla was the opposite, was that it had good actors.
And it didn't do anything with them.
Like Bryan Cranston's here for like 10 minutes, Julie Binoche is here for like a minute and a half.
Ludicrous.
One of the things I was most thrilled about is to go see Julie Binoche in a big blockbuster movie, because she missed her chance with Jurassic Park years ago. But hey, here she is now in a giant monster. Oh, there she goes. Great.
But don't worry, Bryan Cranston's still... No, he's not.
We still have Elizabeth Olsen. Oh, I love it. No, we go back to Elizabeth. Oh, it's Aaron Taylor Johnson now. Great.
But yeah. So we were talking about San Andreas.
Yes, we were. Hey, we've gone off on worse times.
We really have.
Yeah. And I just don't... I mean, to say this contains stock characters is an insult to stock characters.
They're not really characters so much as objects that exist in the radius of The Rock. Like, you can tell who's going to make it through the film by their degree of connection to The Rock. Sure. If you have The Rock's phone number, or you stay with somebody who has The Rock's phone number, you're likely to survive. If you abandon somebody who has The Rock's phone number, you're pretty sure you're going to end up...
That's the way with most disaster films, isn't it? The main guy and the people.
This is what I was thinking about, right? Because I was trying to think why it didn't work. Because it has a lot of ingredients that should make it so bad it's good. Like, it's got terrible CGI.
Oh, the CGI should point out, the CGI is quite bad.
It's kind of unforgivable, isn't it?
What? Especially when it cost $100 million. Yeah. You spent half of it on The Rock.
And it's got Kylie Minogue showing up simply to provide terrible exposition. Like, her line is pretty much, oh, so your son is dead, and then she conveniently drops off a building.
You don't even see it. It happens behind a closed door. And the building
she shows up. Her line is like, So your son's dead. Or your daughter's dead.
I'd like to put in spoiler alert before that, but I don't care. I hate this film too much.
But also it happens in like the first 15
first
minutes.
First act. Yeah. About the start of the second act.
But like, yeah. It should be, and it has The Rock, who is likable, even if he's playing, he's meant to be playing like an everyman, and I'm not sure I can buy The Rock's physicality as an everyman. Like, it should be a movie that's, and it has Paul Giamatti as a scientist, a seismologist, who like, after the dust is settled, everyone's all like, thank God we had the seismologists.
Even though half of San Francisco, in fact, half the state of California is now dead.
Yeah.
And the film doesn't give a crap, just so long as The Rock managed to save it, who we wanted to save.
So, like, it should be so bad it's great, but it's not. And I think one of the reasons it is because it sort of misunderstands the disaster movie template. Yeah. Because
It knows how to fit into the template, it just doesn't know
how to, what to do within it.
But exactly. I mean, like, it's a book, like most disaster movies, so the ones that I'm thinking of, like even like say the Roland Emmerich ones, which work, I would argue, work
the early
well.
Ones. Like, say,
agree
like Independence Day is dumb, but it is a lot of fun.
But but I mean, like they fundamentally work as disaster films are meant to work. Like you look at them and you understand how the pieces fit together, and you get a sense of scope and scale.
And you get and also again practical effects.
Yeah. Well, for the early ones anyway.
Yeah.
But like I would argue that one of the reasons they work on the storytelling level is because they have like a vast broadcast. Like you start wide and you end narrow, so you have like you have
Bill Pullman, Jeff Goldblum,
Will Smith. And they're all completely disconnected,
and then they all come
and then they all come
the
together
end.
At the end. And you've even got the family in the trailer and stuff like that.
Exactly.
And like as the story develops, they get swept up and they end up together.
Randy Quaid,
yeah.
Brent Spiner,
oh yes, he's coming back for the sequel apparently.
Oh, brilliant.
I know, even though I don't need that explained. Yeah. I don't need you to deal with the fact that his character died. I'm just happy to have Brent Spiner back.
I hope it's a twin brother. I really hope it's a twin brother.
Clive.
I love it. The twin brother.
And nobody really mentions it.
That's just nobody even, like, just got it.
Oh, yeah, well, sure, he was here. He was there last time. Yeah, he was just at the cafeteria when that shit went down. And I think the reason that San Andreas doesn't work as well is because it works from the premise it's a star-driven film. So it starts with The Rock, and it ends with The Rock, and you've just got this through line of, like, it's not a natural disaster film so much as it's a movie starring The Rock where his enemy is an earthquake. And I think, like, you have, like, was it? It's like you've got Ian Gruffudd, who's like cast in the Billy Zane role.
Nobody seems to pronounce his name. It's Ewan Griffith.
Ewan Griffith. Apologies, Mr. Griffith, if you're listening.
We can hope so.
We can only aspire to such things. Yeah. But he's cast in a role that is very transparently modelled on Billy Zane in Titanic.
No. This makes Billy Zane in Titanic look like Macbeth.
Oh, yeah. No. Like Billy Zane is the pinnacle of Billy Zane. But I thought you're never going to out Billy Zane, to quote Zoolander.
No, he can't, because he's just not. He's not an interesting character at all.
No, like that, nothing. No. To him.
And it just they just put in this character just so he can do one bad thing, and then for a really weak payoff.
Okay. We have talked too much about a film that nobody, I haven't seen, and neither you care about.
So you shouldn't.
So just stop it.
No.
I care, Jay. I
would call it presidential decree and say, just stop it.
I am, personally, I am very much in favour of kicking the crap out of it at any possible
time. It should be quaking in its boots.
Bloody well should be. Although, I'm just sorry.
So good you didn't even get it.
Yeah, I know.
I got it. I mean, it's just, yeah. I cannot muster up any enthusiasm for that film because it doesn't do that.
Yeah, well.
I can muster up passion and hatred and vitriol.
Yeah, those are all useful things.
Those are all, you harness them.
Harness them.
This is the power of the dark side.
Oh, don't. Let's move on, shall we? And let's talk about some of this week's new releases. And
because we all know those are going to be cheerful for everybody involved.
Yes. I said through gritted teeth. Let's start with one that none of us has seen. Insidious Chapter 3.
Yeah.
Who wanted a third chapter of this?
I didn't like the first one. I didn't like the second one.
Haven't seen the second one.
I will never be seeing another one again.
The first one's
alright. I didn't mind. I didn't mind.
Very average. In that way that all horror films are now.
Yeah. From the director of Aquaman, right?
Oh, James Wan.
Does anybody
need an Aquaman movie?
Does anybody care?
I love the fact that he went from being like a joke and Entourage to something we should really do.
James Cameron.
Yeah. That was a great guy.
That was a great guy.
Yeah. But no, like I did not dislike the first one.
No, yeah.
And I would argue,
it's
like,
okay.
As PG-13 horror films go, which you shouldn't really have it. You don't need
no,
a PG-13.
No, you should never.
No,
yeah.
Never. If you're going to go full tilt on the scares, you better up that rating. You better get to an R.
I'd argue it's not quite as good as Sinister, although Sinister is just average.
I'm not a fan of Sinister at all.
Oh, okay.
I like Sinister. Weirdly.
I like the ideas of it. I like
I liked that a lot more than I thought it would, which surprised the hell out of me.
It's still surprising the hell out of me.
Yeah, I know. I don't understand it.
Yeah. Everything up until like the main character's faulty pattern recognition at the end, that's the bit that throws me. It's like, you know, yes. Everybody who's had this film has lived a long while after finding it, but has then moved to a new house and been brutally killed. Spoilers. We should leave this house. Oh, sorry, yes, spoilers, apologies.
It's
an old film.
That's an old film, yes.
Anything that's in the cinema is kind of probably leave it alone. But anything that's out, like being released on DVD for a couple of years, you're kind of. If you haven't seen it by now.
That's our indemnity clause. We'll run up by the lawyers.
Apologies. But yes, faulty pattern recognition.
I liked it.
I enjoyed it.
Anyway, Conjuring 3, not a hope.
Insidious.
They're all the same.
They did a spin off with Annabelle, wasn't it? And that was pretty terrible.
God, I remember watching a trailer and actually laughing. I think it was a comedy, and then I realised it wasn't a comedy. It's like, oh, good God, this is a real thing. This sounds like one of those spoof trailers or something.
But I love that. I love that. Like, The Conjuring has its own sort of weird Avengers universe.
What a comparison.
Yeah,
fair enough.
Oh, God. Oh.
Let's move on to something perhaps a little more interesting. Fortune's Wheel.
Yeah.
You've seen this, haven't you?
I have seen it. I saw Jadif, or Diff, although Jadif last year, this year. So. This is a documentary. A bizarre kind of story about a lion tamer in Fairview in Dublin.
Oh.
And it begins with a kind of a legendary story in the area of a lion that escapes and kind of runs down the Fairview Strand and kind of scares the hell out of people. And then you can get all the people talking heads who, when they're kids, you remember it. I was cornered somewhere and then they're trying to stop it. It's good fun, good kind of rollicking adventure story from back in the black and white Dublin days that I've got in. And that's fine, it's interesting enough. But the story kind of moves on, and there's a guy that obviously had kept the lion, and I think a couple of lions, called Bill Stevens, who was a lion tamer and worked in circuses and stuff around Dublin, but wanted to kind of work in the big major place in America and stuff like that. That was his kind of
dream.
And he'd write to the Fawcett's and Darwin. I don't know what the big Americans are. Right, remember somebody alone. I forget. Anyway, he writes to them, try to get jobs. He doesn't really kind of goes to America briefly to try and get in. Doesn't really happen for him. And he comes back and he ends up working in kind of trying to ever more dangerous stunts and stuff like that, which gets a bit hairy and stuff like that. And that's kind of the story, though, giving away what happens. And it's kind of a love story and a bit of a thing between families and stuff. It's an interesting enough story, and people seem to like it a lot. It won
Best Documentary
at Dublin Film Festival. I didn't see it in that way. It's fine. It's a perfectly serviceable Wednesday night film on RTE to gather the family around, and eventually towards the end it hits a kind of sadness, a kind of melancholic note, which works really well for it, but it takes a long time to get there, and it's a little disposable before that. And the telling of it's very basic documentary standard, nothing too. I think some of the characters are very interesting, kind of inner Dublin kind of funny kind of characters that you get a good laugh from. It's okay, it's fine, it's well worth watching. Not particularly cinematic, it's more, as I said, it's more of a TV kind of thing, and I imagine it'll go over like gangbusters on TV. Like, people love it because that's that kind of everybody kind of talking about it kind of thing, you know, particularly in Dublin. But it's fine, probably a little overpriised, I would say, but it's doing nothing wrong, it's just not doing that particularly inspiring. It's fine.
Do you know what? If more films just did that,
that's true. Yeah, yeah.
I'm going to move on to a couple of heaven help me, a couple of sports themed films now. First of all,
okay, this is dangerous ground for you, Philip.
I know this is. Here I go. See, Philip, go, Philip. First of all, one-off event this Monday in a few cinemas is the documentary Gascoigne.
about, I presume, Paul and not Bamber.
Exactly. Oh, I've watched one about Gasser.
I knew you would say that.
But no, this is about Gasser himself, Paul Gascoigne, and the highs and the many, many lows of being Paul Gascoigne.
It's unusual. I haven't heard any. The first I heard of that even existed was like a few days ago.
Yeah, as I say, it's a one-off event because it's been screened to a number of cinemas, followed by a live Q&A.
Why is it done this way? That's an unusual way to pitch
it. I presume it's going to get a wider release further on.
Okay.
I presume, but I could be wrong.
Tragic story, tragic kind of
and
character.
And sadly, it's a story we probably all know too well.
Well,
but don't
that.
Worry, it'll all wind up okay in the end because Gazzo will show up with chicken and a fishing rod.
I'm not ready to make those jokes yet.
I am.
I like Gazza. You know, you're not a football fan, so you don't understand.
I wasn't there, man.
You weren't there, man.
Yes, it is, of course, the story of Paul Gascoigne.
No, it should be interesting, I would imagine. But it's kind of remarkable a documentary just appear out of nowhere and be ready to screen. It's like, what? Why didn't anybody tell me this?
Well, I'm telling you now.
Well, you are. Also, I knew about it. Yeah. But anyway, it's fine. Yes. Thanks, Philip.
Sorry, more twists and turns than in the Shyamalan finale.
We're a terrible director. Anyway, let's move on.
Also, getting a limited release in a few cinemas, both north and south of the border, is a Northern Irish set drama, Shooting for Socrates. Now, this is based around the heady days of the 1986 World Cup, and a match in which Northern Ireland played Brazil.
I remember watching that weirdly when I was a kid.
There's a fixture I've actually never even heard of. But there you
really?
Go.
Yeah. I remember, I think the Brazilian fullback loved Pat Jennings from about 40 yards in that match.
That's why I'm glad you're here.
And,
this kind of detail.
And Socrates, of course, was one of the kind of the 1980s in a Brazil team that kind of flattered to deceive because he really didn't quite win anything that he thought he should have won, but he was one of the elegant midfielder with the beard and the handsome looks kind of thing. He was that guy. He's a pin-up Brazilian kind of 80s footballer.
Mm.
So I presume that's what they're getting at there.
Yes, pretty much.
So is this a narrative or...?
It's a narrative, yeah. Okay. It follows the life of a football supporter named Arthur, played by Richard Dormer.
Good Vibrations.
And his son Tommy, played by... Oh crap, where's the name? Where is the bloody name? I can't even find. Art Parkinson, star of San Andreas. He played the little boy.
There was a little boy in San Andreas? Oh, there was a little boy in San Andreas.
He was annoying.
Socrates would be quaking in his boots.
Oh.
We've had that gag twice.
We're just shaking things up in the podcast here.
He's off the Richter scale, this guy.
Oh, God, I'm just waiting for the ground to open up and swallow.
Oh, good lord.
Yes.
We're going to burn hell.
It's not quite a natural disaster yet, though.
No, give it time. It's directed by James Erskine, and it also stars Bona Gallagher and John Hannah. And,
It sounds warm.
It sounds
relatively
sweet and inoffensive. Well, why not?
Yeah. Indeed.
It's no United Passions.
No.
I'm bracing myself here. I'm cracking my knuckles.
You crack your knuckles.
Because I need to talk about a namesake of mine. Listen up, Philip. This film is getting rave reviews more or less all round, except from three notable people, and that's those of us at the head of Scannon.
Yeah.
I hate this film.
I hate this film. You don't hate it as much as I do. And you
know
I do.
And I hate it.
Yeah.
You haven't seen it, Darren.
I haven't seen it. No. I'm enthused.
Niall, Jay, and I saw it at JDiff, and we were sat there, three of us in a row, and just at the end, we looked at each other and thought, and all I could say was, that's not good.
I think that's the only film I saw at Scannon, or I heard about Scannon, where you guys all sort of agreed at JDiff, apart from Lost River.
Yeah. It doesn't happen too often.
But everybody knew Lost River was going to be terrible. I think that was the thing.
Yeah, I went to see Lost River because I knew it was going to be bad. I just wanted to see how bad it would be.
And it wasn't bad enough to be fun.
No. It was actually quite accomplished in some ways, but not enough.
Well, you know, if you steal it off...
Hey, you're being to be your director of photography. Fair enough.
Yeah. Anyway. And I mean, anybody who's a David Lynch fan, that much of a David Lynch fan, can't be all bad.
Oh, I don't know about that.
So you're waiting for that. Anyway, back to Listen Up, Philip. This is directed by Alex Ross Perry, and it has become the most talked about American indie of the year.
Yeah.
Basic story is Philip, played by Jason Schwartzman, is an author. Lives in New York. He's about to launch his second novel. And he's refusing to do publicity for the thing. He's, in fact, you know, he's refusing to cooperate with anybody. And that's all he ever does. This film achieves something quite remarkable. It features the most unlikable protagonist in a film I have seen in quite some time.
And just to be clear, we were talking about a film earlier where a man steals a rescue helicopter that could help dozens of civilians and flies it to...
Yeah, but the problem with listening to Philip is I don't want The Rock to die. I want Philip, that Philip, to die, and he point blank refuses to do anything.
And the problem with this film for me, in that, and it's kind of exactly what Philip said, in the sense that you've got this character who is kind of hateful and hates everyone, and you know,
and
he hates himself.
Very hateable.
And very hateable.
And the film sets him up to be hateable. Yeah. But the problem is he's hateable.
There's
he's
no
toxic.
Arc to it. It's exactly the same level all the way through. He doesn't learn anything. And I'm not saying that it has to be the same predictable thing. Then you get the reveal to be.
It doesn't go very many ways that you'd expect it to, because.
It's because the sense of it that doesn't really know where it wants to go.
I don't think
in
it does.
Real way.
No.
Elizabeth Moss, who was
his girlfriend.
Girlfriend, and she's great because she's always great. And she gets a little kind of.
It kind of
slips into her story a little bit.
For about 15-20
minutes.
Which
is about the best part of the film.
It is.
Really, because he's off screen for the most part, which is fine. I think everybody can enjoy that. And
allows Moss to do her thing.
Yeah. Plus, you get Jonathan Pryce, who plays your Philip Roth-alike writer.
Yeah. This part of the story, Philip gets an offer from Pryce's author to go to his country house and like a writing retreat.
But they just piss it up. One-upmanship and two assholes, basically.
Yeah, although I like Price as an asshole because A, he does it very well, and B, he would be a great antagonist in any other film. It's just a pity that the protagonist
you're balanced, like, you got somebody that you need somebody warmer to play against, somebody with Price to make him kind of.
Well, he does get that for a little while because Christian Ritter turns up as his daughter,
who's
very resentful towards him for reasons we later learn about. But while all that's happening, around Philip. And ultimately, it all comes back to this horrible, horrible character who just infects every frame he's in with his bile, his venom, his poison. And I hate him. And because I hate him, I hate this film.
Yeah.
He kills it. He absolutely kills this film. And I see this film being praised for its refusal to be sentimental or to go the ways you think about it. Some people are even attributing to it a very literary quality because it's able to go down these side routes. The only reason I'm happy with those side routes is because it gets us away from the prick in the middle. Pardon my French, but...
Also...
So listen up. Philip is telling you that he hates listen up, Philip.
I damn right I am.
And
you know what? I expected Jay to go off and more of a rant of this, but I think he's just too depressed.
Do you know what? I'd seen that, and what was your film we've seen? While We're Young. Fairly close together.
I thought The Bomb was okay.
I thought The Bomb was terrible until I seen this, and it got an extra star just because this exists.
Yeah, I mean, whatever you think about The Bomb, it's nowhere here as hateful or as hateable.
No, but it's touching this whole thing again of that kind of rich white people whining about stuff.
Yeah.
Which is exhausting when you get a whole film of essentially that. And it's like, I'm tired of listening to the, you know, will my second book be published? Who gives a shit?
Well, that's the worst part. It will be published.
Yeah.
But the only way he knows to deal with it is just to hate on people. There's one point where he goes back to his apartment and he's talking with the girlfriend. And he says, blah, 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 blah. And she just turns to him and says, well, you're a cruel, miserable person. Well, you get it.
Yeah. Also, it's shot, and it's seen this being praised well for cinematography, and it's shot essentially on Instagram, and it's to make it look like it's, you know, 70s vintage 35mm or 16mm kind of thing. And it's like everything else about the film, it rings false.
It's
you have to do that to kind of show how arch and knowing and aware you are, It just says that it's nothing original. Like, it's saying nothing.
Yeah. I'm gonna use a word that I what I'm getting. I haven't seen the film, but what I'm getting from the descriptions, this word applies. Hipster.
Yes.
It is, but you know, that's a cheap shot in the sense that people use it, I think, to go, oh, it's a hipster thing, and then dismiss everything. But it's not,
anything with any kind of old school leaning is accused of being hipster. But this isn't actively hipster.
It takes place in that world, I guess, for a large part of it.
I wouldn't call any of the characters in it hipster.
No, but they exist in that.
The film itself.
Yeah.
It's a very, there isn't a creative.
There's a filmmaking hipsterism to it.
Yeah.
There's a director who genuinely believes he's
innovating.
And he's on the edge and he's a little reckless.
Yeah, he seems to look at this material and he's thinking about what's kind of, how the cinematography is going to look like and what. He just seems to be thinking, hey, I'm going to make a Hal Ashby film, but I'm going to turn everything on its head and make everybody hateable.
Also, it's like he's saying, I'm going to be edgy, but I'm not quite sure what edgy means.
Yeah. Just because I hate the lead does not entitle you to claim some kind of profundity.
No. And unless we forget,
I mean, I'm capable of hating a lot of people, but I haven't met anybody I...
You are the Dalai Lama compared to the other film.
Thank you.
That says,
bless you, my child.
Yeah, but I mean, it is possible to make a film around an unlikable protagonist. Sure. Loads of films.
My favourite film of all time is made around Jake LaMotta and Robin Vero.
Wes Anderson's made around Reed Rowe.
That's my favourite film of all time.
But a filmmaker brings their humanity to
a film, even with the character is at its most despicable.
Yeah. Yeah.
And there's no nonsense of that. He understands the character or motivations of the character, or that there's anything you can glimpse in between dialogue, in between what he does, how he sees. There's nothing there.
No.
There's no redemption in any sense. And it doesn't have to be in the character, just in the film. There's no sense that even the director likes his characters in any way. Like, it's a hateful film all around.
It really is. And you know what? I say that despite the fact that I don't hate it quite as much as you. I know that because there are elements of it I do like. I think the score is nicely jazzy. Yeah. The supporting cast, they redeem themselves.
They just about make it watchable.
They do.
Moss and Price kept me in the cinema.
Oh, and their cat companion, Gadzooki.
Yeah.
After that, I really cannot find much.
I won't be recommending it. Indeed, a lot of people will be. God help them.
Our good friend of the podcast, David Neary, he's been maintaining a thing for years that Jason Schwartzman is evil personified. This is just going to add fuel to his fire.
I don't mind.
I liked him in Rushmore.
Yeah,
I liked him in the TV show Bored to Death, which is in some ways. It's done better, very much so, and that's Ted Danson. This is the thing.
Yeah, he's played variants on this character before.
Yeah,
but this is just dialed up to 11.
It's too much.
Yeah,
if I could never see this film again, it'd be too soon. Cool.
Funny you should mention Gadzooki the cat. Actually,
I
remember. I actually got an email about this, which is great because it's great when companies have your email address so they can send you stuff like this. Apparently, the cat whose real name is Fluffy, and who won all sorts of animal awards for their work there. Yay, Gadzooki. But apparently, he's suffering from cancer, I believe. And they're having a fundraiser. They're doing a Kickstarter or crowdfunding, in order to get treatment for the cat. And they sent an email out, and apparently, they sent it through all the industry.
When?
This was back in February.
Why didn't Jason Schwartzman pay for it?
Yeah, you imagine that the people.
Why would I pay for the fucking cat?
You imagine
I liked the cat, but after that,
I don't like cats in general, so I wouldn't be.
But you imagine that a catering budget would help a bit, you know? Like,
anything.
And then it seemed weird.
Everybody.
It arrived!
Karen's email has
arrived. My email arrived.
For no discernible use anymore, but it did arrive.
It's the thought that counts. It arrived with my love.
Indeed. It's a little heart on it as well.
An emoticon.
Anyway, so in sum, we live in a world where Listen Up Philip and Kitty Cancer exists, and I hate it.
Yep, what Philip said.
Yeah.
Finally today.
Oh, good God, I thought we were going to end on that.
No.
There's an upper. Yeah, there's
an upper. Are you offering me a happy ending, Philip?
Yes.
Don't massage the truth there.
In its way. Compared to Listen Up Philip, it's a happy ending.
Okay, good enough.
Spy.
Oh yes, you've seen this, I haven't. But you're heartily recommending
it. Darren and I have seen it, and we do heartily recommend. Yep. This is the latest collaboration from director Paul Feig, and, or is it Feig or Fake?
I don't know, I always pronounce it Feig. But
I would go Feig, but I'm
just because no idea.
It's vague on the, vague on the matter.
Yeah.
Well, him and Melissa McCarthy, hit star of his last two films, Bridesmaids and The Heat. And I have to say, I think this is better than either of those films.
Okay.
I would agree with that.
Basically, spy genre spoof. And
it's better than Kingsman, I presume.
Liked Kingsman.
You're the one.
Yes, I'm the one.
Actually, that's good.
But I hate Roger Moore films. I hate Roger Moore films, so I love Kingsman because it's like a Roger Moore film that's aware of how terrible it is.
But that doesn't change the fact it's terrible.
Yes, but it's self-awarely terrible.
Doesn't mean it's not terrible.
But it, like, transcends terrible.
Like, okay, I don't think the word transcends, and Kingsman, anyway, we got distracted.
Back to Spy.
Yeah.
So it is sending up, it starts off as sending up Bond, but then it gets into a lot of other territory. Basic story is, Jude Law is an American super spy in a James Bond mold. Basically James Bond, but American.
Okay.
And
which is really weird for a British actor.
Yes, I know. I thought that too. But he's killed in action. And his assistant, who talks to him via his earpiece, is Melissa McCarthy. And she's based in the CIA basement where she helps out agents on missions like this. And in order to try and make good on her pal's death, she offers to go into the field to try and track down the drug lord, or rather in this case drug lady, that had him killed, the drug lady being played by Rose Byrne,
who's always great.
She's great
and currently underrated.
So far so good.
Yeah, and that is pretty much it as far as plot goes.
Okay.
This is, it's broad, it's crude. At 2 hours it's a little too long, but
did it reach 2 hours?
Yeah.
Okay.
But that does not change the fact that it is often hilarious. I mean, really, really fun.
Okay.
Yeah.
I thought Bridesmaids was fun to a point.
Yeah.
But it kind of labored a point about being a lad's movie, but with ladies. Whereas this has a similar feel in that you've got this female agent, Melissa McCarthy type, shall we say. And she goes out in the field. But it doesn't make gags at the fact that she's bad at the job. Quite the opposite.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's not beating you over the head with any kind of feminist message.
Yeah, it is there, but it's never heavy-handed.
Oh, man, no message should be heavy-handed. You're making a bad film if you're heavy-handed. The message, in my opinion.
But
sounds good.
It is a lot of fun, and all the cast are on their A game. Jude Law as the agent, he's having a blast. Jason Statham rocks up as a rival agent, and he just gloriously sends up his cinematic image. And he actually gets some of the biggest laughs.
There are points where Statham just describes what seem to be the plots of his previous films, and it's hilarious.
Yeah,
it's beautiful.
Okay,
as well as that, even the small roles, the supporting cast get their big laughs. Bobby Cannavale, Peter Serafinowicz, Miranda Hart of all people.
Really,
I don't usually find her funny.
Well, I didn't know her from anything except Miranda.
She got me laughing. Yeah. I enjoy this cast. I enjoy this film. Broad and overlong.
But this is an upbeat ending.
See?
Yeah, you're right. When you're right, you're right.
Go see Spy.
I'll go see Spy.
And you won't listen to me when I'm right sometimes.
I'm just worried I've agreed with Philip on both of the major releases this week.
This is a new Donald.
This is why you need to listen up to Philip.
Are we still here?
Yes, we are. Right, let's wrap it up.
Hour 45 of the Pascan On podcast.
Things have descended into cannibalism.
Right, on that cannibalistic note, see you all next week.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.